Hello, everyone. Welcome. My name is Marilyn Shannon, and I am delighted to have you all join us today. I hope it's lovely wherever you are in the world, and we're excited to have you. And I'm going to say hi to Amnon before we get on with the show.
Hello, Marilyn. How are you?
I'm good. And you?
I'm just fine.
Good.
Beautiful glasses.
If you haven't noticed, I got new glasses. My children did tell me it was a little too big for my face, but I have a lot of world to see, so I'm happy to have it. So thank you, Amnon. I really am I'm so happy with it. The world seems like a brighter place and bigger.
It is. Now, if they were only rosy color,
well, they are
you
little.
Could see rose.
Well, I do. Color. I see the world as I see. Okay. I see. I can imagine that the world is rosy through my glasses, so I'm really excited. So I want to tell you all to please feel free to connect with us on our chat. Feel free to put your name under our video. You can ask questions, you can comment, you can tell us how your day is going, and also you can call in anytime to the show at 919-518-9773, or you can connect with us on Computers 2K Voice. And we'd love to have you comment and share your experiences and ask questions, because that's how we learn and that's how we connect. So, you know, we always love to bring cutting-edge information, tools, strategies, techniques, ideas, people, inspiring stories, everything and anything that we can to educate us and let us know what's going on in the world and maybe bringing the world a little closer to each and every one of you and into your hearts. And today, our focus is going to be on co-housing and on from there. And I'm very excited to welcome our guest today, Rains Cohen. Hey, Rains.
How's it going? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How you doing?
Marvelous.
Good.
Beyond. We had hoped that our national exec director, Alice Alexander, would be able to join us as well today, but she's had an injury, so we're wishing her a rapid recovery.
Yeah, she's in the chat.
Oh, good.
So you can't keep a good woman down completely, and with technology, there's a little help from us all.
Excellent.
So she's there. And I'm going to say, Alice, I know you're listening, so feel free. You can always call in since you couldn't be on the show. You can always write comments and, you know, add to the conversation. Please feel free to do that. So, Rains, you are a co-housing coach and a community activist, right?
Community organizer. Is the title I've been using of late, but yeah. I try to help people find each other, find community, create new communities together.
So tell us about, you know, so you live in Berkeley, right?
I do, in a co-housing neighborhood. We all have our private homes, but in a really large shared area, a common house. We all have our own kitchens, but we do meals together a few times a week. It's sort of the best of both worlds, that choice-creating community and privacy.
So we're going to, and in a little while, Rain's going to take us on a little tour. So it's really kind of like, it's almost like a fairy tale. So tell us about co-housing.
Well, this movement came to the U.S. In the late 80s. A couple architects, McCammon and Durant, were studying in Denmark and said, hey, what is it about that makes these neighborhoods special, that people we actually see people hanging out and talking? And they discovered and wrote about them. And then this original book, Co-Housing, sort of the Bible of the movement. And basically, they said, oh, these are people that came out of co-ops and, you know, the similar movements to here in the 60s to 70s. Say, yeah, let's do group houses. Let's, you know, all live together. People started having families and said, oh, maybe let's have a little more privacy. But we still, you know, we like the design for community. So can we make it so that it's really easy, say, to come home to a fresh cooked meal a few times a week, or have one person watch a whole bunch of kids. I can think of it as sort of the first post-feminist neighborhood design movement that really led to spaces that made it much easier to balance domestic tasks, and you know, on the assumption that, you know, women were going to be working as well as men. Let's get past old stereotypes about how the labor is divided.
So let me interrupt you just a second. So, because you're saying a lot of really great things, and I want to make sure that we capture some of these things. So you say, first of all, Denmark. What was so special about Denmark?
Well, I'd say that there was I mean, a lot of, you know, post-World War II, a boom like we've had here, But I think just the mix of political and economic conditions that favored communitarianism, the sense of sharing, unlike here where the focus is so much on single private home ownership, there's a greater set of tools and resources and support for sharing at different levels,
I see.
including the neighborhood level.
So is it a normal way of living in Denmark, or is it also kind of like a movement and
It's had a very wide influence there. It's very popular.
1% of the housing stock?
The estimate might be, 1% of the housing stock there, but it's influenced so much more, even affordable and public housing. The idea is, okay, let's get the future residents engaged and involved in the process.
Gotcha. And so how long have you been living in a co-housing?
Well, this is my second co-housing neighborhood. I've lived in First Swan's Market in Oakland, California, now Berkeley co-housing. My wife Betsy and I moved here in 2003, and we're the new kids on the block. You could say there's just been two resales since then. 12 years between resales. It's a very stable community. Half the founders are still here after 23 years, and nobody wants to leave. There are, I mean, there's been some births, some deaths, some housemates, and life changes, and marriages. Yeah, but it's just we're trying to recreate that even old-fashioned neighborhood,
Old-fashioned meaning.
where you know your neighbors, this small town feeling, that sense of accountability and presence and support. I know which neighbor I could borrow the use of a truck from, or which neighbor I could borrow some cinnamon from. Or which neighbor that will get me educated so that we can, be really efficient in our recycling and our bicycling and greenness and so on.
And how many people live in your community?
Let's see, we have about 34 of us, including our renters, associate members, kids. Currently, age range from 16 days old to 87 years old.
And you all and you own your home?
It's primarily a home ownership
Home.
model here in the U.S. There's starting to be rental co-housing. Of course, there's rentals in co-housing, but yeah, primarily it's home ownership. That's what got the projects built. People investing and putting their down payment invested into projects and deciding it together.
So is every co-housing community have a different philosophy, or are you all very similar, or what's the difference?
Well, we sort of, people got started in different ways, but mostly, driven by communities forming around that book, and the philosophy of being good neighbors. And sometimes people overlay, say, okay, do we want, a particular religious or other focus? But by and large, mostly it's just being good neighbors. And you'll find just the people with a willingness to listen to other people, openness to engage people who don't feel like they need a moat around their house, but who can see some benefit from sharing, whether that's economic or social benefits that they get.
Interesting.
I think marketers, what do they call us? LOHAS, lifestyles of health and sustainability market, or cultural creatives might be a nicer term.
Social creatives. Oh, I love that.
Cultural
Oh,
creatives, I used
cultural
that
create.
word.
I like social too.
Yeah.
So tell us about that. Tell us what that means.
Well, I think you'll find a lot of people, one report called us hyper-civic and over-educated. a lot of people with advanced degrees, a lot of people who have the comfort, the luxury to be able to take a risk, try something different, and the interest and desire to do so. People coming out of academic or other environments with a willingness to engage in and the resources to say, yes, I can afford home ownership and do it in a way that's not your standard way of doing
Well,
it.
people who see the world as something they
Is
can.
that Betsy talking? That's
And
Betsy
my wife Betsy is
chiming in.
will chime in
I
now
mean,
and
this
then.
is perfect co-housing, co-showing together.
She's the urban planner in the family. I'm the urban dreamer. So
Okay.
I married her for a PhD and get to benefit.
Good. So I want to ask you something before we go into too much. Is there a so in this community, is there a fence around the community? Is it isolated somehow? I mean,
Where I mean, there's we've got a fence around the sides and out front, mostly just to keep kids or dogs from running into the streets. it's not a gated community, but we know our neighbors in the community really well. We know the neighbors outside somewhat well. There is, you know, some element of being inward focused. Like, you know, the classic design is let's put the kitchen sink somewhere where you can see what's going on over in our common house. And so looking in instead of looking out. But that can mean sometimes that we're looking in so much that we don't necessarily connect to our neighbors as much. But we've had a preponderance of activists in co-housing and neighborhood organizers and people that have helped engage their neighbors in various ways, politically or otherwise, to bring about good things.
So you mentioned putting the sink someplace where you can see out.
Well, you see into the common house. The usual thing is, you know, put your salon, your parlor, your living room out, you know, near the front of the house. The sink is more towards the back, maybe facing your backyard. The co-housing idea is, well, you don't want somebody, you know, doing the dishes to feel isolated. So give them the opportunity to be able to see, oh, there's somebody over in the common house. I should go check it out. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of reporting on co-housing says, oh, you've got scheduled events and services, but really it's much more ad hoc. It's the members themselves and whatever we feel like doing becomes the priority.
So is there like a president, a director? In the hierarchy of things, how do decisions get made?
Well, sure. Well, legally, we're all on the board of a homeowners association, typically. And notice that we're all on the board, not just electing a board. And we make decisions by consensus. So while we have officers, they're just pro forma roles to sign documents. But pretty much it's together we're running this association that manages our reserves and, you know, improvements and so on. But it isn't your stereotypical condo where it's like, how do we sue each other and make sure we have conformity and preserve property values. But at our best, which isn't always, we're getting a forum to hear each other and support using the same system to get more of our needs met collectively.
Do you ever just feel like you just want to get away?
Well, I can do that. I can go home, close the blinds. I'm in my own house. It's in my own space. I own it. I don't have to go to the common meals. People expect me to, but I'm not required. We have some expectation that people will come and cook, but we can't force you to cook for us. But you generally, I find you get more benefit out of community the more you put into it.
Sure. And so you are a community organizer. So what exactly do you do?
Well, so together with my wife, Betsy, we run meetup groups like East Bay Co-Housing just in our towns of Berkeley and Oakland alone. We've got over 4,200 people seeking community. So we try to help them do trainings and tours and gatherings to help people find each other, find existing communities, and create new ones.
So how many communities are there in your area?
Well, nationally, there's 160 or so up and running, 100 more in development, all around, including a number in your area, North Carolina. But quite a few, a couple dozen in Northern California, and at least a dozen in the East Bay.
So you are. So is your area like one of the fastest growing areas for co-housing?
It's been a lot, you know, by sheer numbers, since your population growth and interest. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of interest. The trick is because we follow the regular housing market, so few people now can afford home ownership around here. We're trying to, in our group organizing, cast a big tent and say, how do we support also what we're calling co-householding, you know, group houses, mm-hmm. Or the hip young hashtag co-living.
Yeah.
And basically help people get together whatever fashion, partner in co-ops, do innovations for affordability, partner with land trusts, find new ways. There's now some all rental, nonprofit-owned co-housing that we are helping organize.
So find new ways.
This is a self-help movement. It's not like you can go out and say, in a few cases, you can find a place open. But as Scoop Disker says, if you don't like the news, go out and make some of your own. Well, if you don't like your housing options, let's go co-create new ways of doing it. And together, as a community, there's a lot more you could do that none of us on our own would be able to or want to.
Yeah, it's kind of fascinating because I thought we, you know, most of it was just community. But you're talking about just a multiple way of living together, not just in a neighborhood, but creating co-housing, like living in a house together.
Neighborhood scale. I mean, we're building on a U.S. movement. You know, the housing cooperatives movement has a long history in the U.S. of over 50 years. But it's in some ways gotten marginalized by the banks and federal practice. And it's all, you know, a lot of times it's, they're co-ops, but they aren't necessarily cooperative. They don't necessarily have shared space or shared meals or that sense of community if people are there out of necessity. So we're trying to say, can we create choices where people can get deeper? We've had neighbors that now do vacations to Cuba together, actually to France last year, educate each other about bicycling, support each other. And yeah, and even all of life and even death. My neighbor Don passed away. It was a privilege to be able to spend the night with him. We were able to fill a lot of gaps, provide a lot of social care they did bring in professional care eventually, but in hospice, but we were able to help. So his wife was able to keep working. And
interesting. I want to ask you about some of the benefits, but Chris is asking, what stereotypes does the co-housing movement face, and how are you breaking down those barriers with education?
Thanks, Chris. That's a great question. Any headline writer loves the word commune. It's a nice word, packs a punch, a nice short word. And so we have to get, you know, at least now we're not past 20th century communes into 21st century. But yeah, we got this idea that, oh, this is hippie commune. People had experience in the 70s or in their student years of group housing. And we're able to say, well, I think we've learned a lot from that time. How to have set their dial right to a place with enough privacy and community so that's a choice. So it's not, okay, let's go have arguments about whose turn it is to clean the sink, but instead find ways to, have a smaller shared sphere, bring in professionals to help get the work done and have, you know, our own separate private lives, our own separate work and so on. Other stereotypes of community, the hippie thing, and in some ways I got to say the hippies were right. We've learned a lot from the 70s, and whether it's green technology or other things, I think mostly that we've learned that, you know, people are concerned, oh, consensus, I do that at Occupy. Isn't that take a long time? Can't you know, it's hard to decide things, but we've learned how to build relationship and trust. So over time, we can very quickly get to what matters and spend the time on the stuff that really is a, you know, big decision, spending large amounts on remodeling our common kitchen, for example, and not on the small stuff we're able to prioritize.
So advantages of living in a co-housing, I'm sure the list is very, very long. And so, but before you, and I want to ask you that because I think that's really huge, but the philosophy of living together, what is the root, the philosophy, the core of living like this? The kahuna of benefits.
Fundamentally, it's about really the power of from knowing your neighbors comes knowing yourself. Co-housing has been called the most expensive personal growth workshop you'll ever take, and because of the cost of the home, you learn a lot. I mean, it's like how, you know, having your mirror held up to you on a frequent basis. It's like, okay, if I can't talk to Jane, then who can't talk to me? And can I talk to John, who can talk to Jane? And we're getting a lot of feedback, and so I guess the stones that rub together get polished. We get to learn a lot about what people are willing to do or live with, or how different people work with money or decisions or what matters. Working with feedback, getting that feedback and then the support. If I want to have 50 people over for an event, I can book the Comet House. I live in 600 square feet with a lot of books. I don't have to have a larger house because I have the benefit of the shared space.
Right. So, and some of the other benefits, specific benefits.
Well, I mentioned it's great for raising kids. We've had in our home community a lot of single moms. There's some others with a lot of single dads and parents in general. To be able to come home to a fresh cooked meal, to be able to have one person watching several kids, those are enormous benefits, and that was the initial driver for a lot of co-housing in the beginning here as well as internationally. Mm-hmm. The big growth area, of course, has been senior co-housing. The boomers, that especially if they're helping their parents navigate the system and say, hell no, I'm not going to go to a nursing home, let's find another way. And it's been great for what we call not just aging in place, but aging in community. And mm-hmm. we can do a lot to support each other in that process. As our community, we talk a lot about it, and there's one community specifically designed. I write about the study group process. We brought over from Denmark the successful aging curriculum that basically says, okay, if you're going to be talk about your future, you know, what do we need to know about health, death, finance, sort of social agreements, so that we can work out ways to take care of each other, but not feel like, oh, I'm always going to be taking care and giving and giving. Find ways to set limits. Like, okay, if you break your hip, I'll come and feed you, but I'm not going to come bathe you. But maybe there's a community service that will. So we can find the way we can have more confidence. This led to a lot of senior co-housing in Denmark. And I wrote about this in the book Audacious Aging. I wrote a chapter about aging in community, including senior co-housing and the Beacon Hill Village movement.
So, and you mentioned what people are learning about themselves. So what did you learn about yourself?
Well, it's been interesting from, living in two different communities and, you know, the different priorities and coming in as the youngest homeowner in the first one, and with the first home buyer without renting in the second one, I've come to learn that I'm on the spectrum of activism, engagement, and connection, and that some people are really wanting just to live here, just to have their private home and not be in a zoo. And so in order to be successful and get my needs met, I need to find ways of meeting other people and understanding where they're coming from and finding ways to present, hey, I'm going to host this event, and here's what I'm doing to make sure it's not going to bother you, and having a checklist. And we've come up with some good communication systems in the community to make sure that people who have different ways of doing things have ways of getting their feedback built and you know, feeling confident that they don't have to hold on and say, wait, stop, but right. have room to sure. We hear each other.
Right.
We get better over time.
Right. I mean, finding when you live with different people, things are going to pop up.
You know? Oh yeah, there's different things in every community, different issues, but we have the tools to support. You know, it's not like okay, let's file lawsuits or attack each other, but let's use our meetings, mm-hmm. and our most effective meetings are ones where we spend a lot of time checking in, so we're knowing what's going on in each other's lives. It's not all business meetings, but time to hear each other and know what's going on.
So, I mean, I would say that you're a pretty good judge of what it is that people connect with, or how they connect the most. What would you say? Because you're helping people connect.
Yeah, and so we look for where, you know, where people are. If they've got a long laundry list, it must be exactly this, it has to be exactly that. That's sort of a warning sign. I mean, yes, you should know your needs and preferences, but think about which aspect you're putting forward, what aspect you're putting first. You know, look for the common ground, look for room to connect, look for where do you have room to meet other people and not force them to meet where you are. And just, you know, find the resource. And that's come, I've sometimes found inspiration from some of my other neighbors and, okay, how are they dealing with that? Okay, you know, could I do that? So yeah, finding connections.
And what about the kids that live there?
I can borrow an ID when I don't have one myself, but my 5-year-old neighbor, it really does help me mow the lawn when I use the push mower. I've noticed the parents do spend more time coordinating with each other, and it's great not to have to drive to play dates and to have support. They've even, two kids from different families are getting treated as one family by a school for preferentially being in the same schedule, in the same class to get, because they get picked up together. So there are definite benefits. And I've seen a lot of kids grow up in the community, and they really get a lot of, they're interacting with adults a lot, and so are more likely to get connected and be very articulate and have ways of getting their needs met.
And so,
I'm asking teenagers if they move into a community, like, all these adults are looking at you. If that's a harder match.
So they are articulate. So what else do you notice about them when they do they go out in the world, or do they stay? Do they go and come back? Are they more comfortable in their own
college? Some come back, and sooner or later. some of my neighbors, are empty nesters that are now renting out a room, but they were sort of keeping room in case a kid came back. I've just seen people go off of the world, it's different for everybody, but my only regret is that most co-housing is, a fixed size, established, and with low turnover like ours, there's not so much room for people to come back. Combine that with housing prices, it's rare for kids to be able to have room to come back into a community as adults, at least in the co-housing as it is today.
Amnon says in the basement. I just want to remind everyone to please feel free to call in 919-518-9773, or you can Skype with us at computers, that's plural, number 2K voice, computers 2K voice, and you can come in and ask questions and... what are you curious about? Are you curious about anything? Because I'm asking all the things that I'm curious about. What are you curious about? So join us in the conversation. Amnon has a question.
Not a question. Oh. I mean, I can think about, I was just listening to Ryan, and I'm saying the biggest benefit for people is I want a big family, and I don't want to have a family of my own, or I never did, and I want it now, the American way, now. This is perfect. This is a big family. And if you don't want them, you just go home.
Go back to your room.
You go back to your room. And it works. But what I'm interested is, don't tell me that there's no politics.
Oh, of course. I mean, there's people are involved. So, of course, there's politics. But we basically, because we're operating by consensus, because we trade in living well together and communicating well, we have better opportunities to work things out. We have learned that consensus is not good for things that start with the letter P. Matters of personal preference, pets, paint color, progeny, puffin policy, stuff that basically, if we don't have a shared values around it, you can just argue till the day's end. Let's call it a professional to advise us on pink colors rather than try to fight it out ourselves.
Mm-hmm. And you were talking about booking the common building.
Common house.
Common house. How did that come to be a common house? Where did it come from?
Well, so our community, and maybe this would be a good point to give you a little tour.
Yeah.
We started out, everyone's different. Ours started with some existing structures and built in and around them. Let's give you a little
support. I think what I'm asking is, who paid for it?
Oh, well, it's basically a shared cost.
Okay.
And we all own our own homes plus 1/14 of the commons.
Okay, so what happened if I have to move? Do I get anything back? Or
it's a condominium. So you sell your home, in our case, our prices are capped, at least for the next decade or so. But usually it's a market rate transaction.
Okay.
So tell us what we're seeing.
So if you let me step down from my front steps. And you can get a peek over here at our, let's make sure we still have a good connection.
Yeah, we're good.
A little bright behind me there. That's my neighbors. Ooh, limoing is happening. And I'm not doing it. Yeah.
Don't push it.
Here we go.
Okay.
So there's the Comet House
behind me.
And then we were able to create this green between the houses, what was a driveway. We built some houses new, like this one, and some used existing cottages like these. Let me step out of the sun here.
So is there a rhyme or a reason? I mean, do you build certain things into the community to support itself, to sustain itself?
That again, sorry?
Your Wi-Fi is, your video is
frozen. I think we're still connected.
You are connected. Can you hear us?
Have I lost you?
Can you hear us?
Can you hear us?
I thought we were close to the Wi-Fi. I may need to reconnect.
Go ahead, Ryan.
All right. Well, bear with us. We'll be right back because I'm curious. So it's going to be very interesting because I would love to take a little tour and see all that they have. And all, here he is. He's really good. Hey. Hey.
So you were asking?
I was asking you, did you build something into the community? You know, whether it's a community garden, are there certain things that your community has that maybe other communities don't have, or a focus?
I think we've, we used some existing buildings and built some new, but we did a bit of a community garden, but it's mostly, the used with the kids. There's three farmers markets year round within a mile of here every week. And lots of great groceries. So we don't grow much of our own food. Mostly, I'd say we've had a focus here on living green, with one person really into recycling, educating the rest of us. Our total trash is two bins a week, and we just get so much prevented and diverted and so on. Mm-hmm. Bicycling is really big here. We invest a lot in bike sheds and tool sheds. Mm-hmm. It's a little hidden urban oasis. The parking's off at the street. And the houses, you can see here, are close together enough. This porch that I'm standing on was built out so we can speak from one porch to the other without yelling.
I see. I love that. So what other little things like that? Those really fascinate me. Just like the kitchen facing out and the deck. What else?
A lot of co-housing design principles that show up when you get a group of residents involved in directing the design process, with a professional architect and developer, we're able to get a lot of input and get our priorities reflected, basically build what we think, what we know we need, rather than what somebody thinks we want.
Based on who's there.
Betsy will give it
to you. Hey, Betsy.
Hi.
Come closer.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah, good. What were you going to say?
I was going to add that one of the core principles that came from Denmark, which builds on other wisdom systems, is the idea you put the cars at the street, you put the people at the center, and you create pathways, physical. So there's a physical component to co-housing that attracted people, like bringing the porches closer together. If you have porches, creating social, easy places for people to gather. So even in the Central Park co-housing in Durham, it's an apartment building, but they used some of their spaces to create gracious sunrooms, and not just hallways, but little mini living rooms, mini libraries, where people feel good gathering and talking informally without having to invite people straight into their homes or being in some kind of institutional setting. So the design is actually one of the key components of co-housing that helps. And many housing cooperatives, which have a shared ownership structure, didn't design any social spaces, or if they did, it sort of belongs to no one.
The thought that comes to my mind while you were talking is, like, I know I'm a people person, and I love, I mean, I'm a people person, but I do get, you know, where I'm out so much that I do need to come back in and, you know, feel kind of, you know, regroup a little bit. And right. I guess I wonder, in the community where you are, or any co-housing community, I think that's part, that would be part of my lesson to learn, would be that I could go and I don't have to come and socialize. You know, that's part of getting comfortable with who you are, is socializing when you want to and not socializing when you don't want to.
It's a learning process, but we do have, I think, a majority of introverts in co-housing by one self-reported study.
I don't know if it's a majority, but people who know they need people but actually spend more time working solo also choose co-housing because they like the idea that there's a ready social mix. It is, as with anything, it's not like instant family or instant friends, although there's that, might be that at the very beginning. We learn to be real, and so we learn by kind of bouncing off each other or observing ourselves over time. I mean, I think that's one of the strengths here, is you're saying, you know, I'm willing to settle in and get to know these people. There are a fair amount of people that we coach who are not ready to settle down. They still want to travel the world, and what they're hoping for is, I want a community when I land in Mexico. I want a community when I land in Guatemala, you know, or wherever they're going. And sometimes that's possible, and we wish them well. But other times, co-housing in the U.S. so far is still about people settling in and learning to know each other. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean people don't take plenty of trips. They do.
Sure. Well, so go ahead. So I want to know about this, the coaching aspect of, you're coaching people on how to be what? How to be neighbors? How to...
It's usually coaching people who are seeking a community or a type of housing that will be more social and suitable for them. So we coach mostly seekers and forming groups.
Yeah, founders of communities, about how to work out some of the process, understand the financial, the social, the marketing, many aspects.
We have several layers, but I would say the bulk of our coaching are seekers, and we're helping people to understand what are the different physical communities out there that might work for them, age-wise, kid-wise, price-wise, location, mm-hmm. obviously. Mm-hmm. But we also, our coaching involves small groups to help them work with understanding how to talk to each other beyond the just either agreeing or butting heads. So we have tools and resources, and also professional
mm-hmm. people. Fascinating. Yeah, I mean, it's a whole, I mean, I obviously, have we lost their sound?
We're still here.
No, there they are. Okay. Yeah. So, Chris also is asking on the chat, are there special rituals that go on?
Every community.
Come a little closer, Betsy, because we're losing.
Yeah.
Every community will, you know, whether of any kind, a small group of people will come up with their own rituals. Yeah. We have a special birthday song, for example, that we sing, and it turns out other communities have their own special birthday songs that they sing, for example. I'm not sure that we have other rituals here.
There's some holidays that get marked, you know, we have latkes around Hanukkah time.
People bring their backgrounds and surface it here and see if other people are interested.
An Easter egg hunt.
Yeah, an Easter egg hunt led by our mostly Jewish, you know, by Jewish families and parents.
Barbecues for Labor Day and Memorial Day.
Another, I would say, core characteristic of co-housing is that many of the people are or have been seekers or creative, you know, people looking for alternative ways of thinking and living in the world. Mm-hmm. So often they aren't involved with their, like a church or a congregation that they grew up with. And so the idea of community and neighborhood becomes a form of that. But there aren't any special traditions. I think right now this National Co-Housing Tour Day,
April 29th.
Yes, that could be one, but it's only been two. This will be the second year. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great way people come together in their community to support that tour.
I want to know about the tour. Do you find that there's some certain trends now? Is there a trend towards this? Is there a trend toward co-housing?
There's definite strong interest out there. We've seen an upsurge in inquiries. It follows the overall real estate market, but there are now more people looking into, say, senior co-housing and fresh look at alternatives. I think after the 2008 crunch in the market, people started, you know, got away from looking at how do I get the most house and then flip it or whatever, into, oh, how do I get the most value and how do I get a place that I stick with? And, you know, that I'm in it for the long run. Okay. Betsy's on the Co-Housing Research Network. I don't know if you've got any fresh data
well,
on this.
Well, not on this in general, but, well, if there's a trend, one is that there are a number of older people who are reading, you know, boomers who are reading ahead, or people just a little older than boomers, reading ahead and saying, gosh, I want to prepare. I want to age consciously. I want to be part of a community that I can end my life in, that will be supportive of that. You know, not so that the trend towards conscious aging is small, but I think it drives people at a certain age to say, "Hey, I want to go this mm-hmm. next step consciously." The other trend is more the fact that housing has become more and more unaffordable, and we do get a fair amount of people approaching us who are hoping that this is a less expensive way, like significantly lower cost. And it isn't, as long as it's people using their own savings, you know, to put down payments and work together. But there seems to be a growing, the word co-housing and also cooperatives has become more on people's lips. In the policy circles, we see little bits of places where it's mentioned. And so I would hope it would become a trend to politically say, you know what, we want to support community-oriented ways of aging or raising family when it comes to affordable housing. Community meaning self-directed by the residents in some special form. I can't honestly say it's a trend, but it has been a trend in the past before co-housing, and perhaps it can emerge again. A greater call for that, something that's not just build a building or build housing, but build neighborhood, build connections as part of
I think that's the trend, and maybe people don't know it yet. But even my husband and I were talking about it last night and had nothing to do with the show. But we just sold our house. We want to move in closer to where our children live, which is about 30 minutes from here because we have grandchildren. And we've both been working a lot, building things, working a lot. And we have connections in our neighborhood, and he's there for a long time. But I have not been a good neighbor.
Mm-hmm. You know, you're busy out in the world.
Yes, I have not been a good neighbor. And I said to him last night, you know, wherever we go next, I want to be a better neighbor. I want to, you know, and I think that there's a way of doing that, you know, where you can create that community, because it's so important now to be connected, to feel the connection.
Yes. And there's a lot of different ways you could do that. And I would also say that your area of North Carolina is just wave to my neighbor. your area of North Carolina is one of the epicenters.
Is it really? How come that is? How come?
Pardon?
How come that is? Why is that?
Research Triangle Park, you know, is a college. We found college towns in the pioneering area for co-housing. You'll find it in eastern and western Massachusetts, D.C. area.
Washington State, Seattle.
Portland, Oregon.
I think part of what co-housing answers is the people who up and left their home communities at a young age. Not in your case, I don't know where you were raised. Maybe it was in this same area. But it has tended to draw people who do have the choices in life. And part of our work is to make sure it could be available to people who don't always have the financial economic choice. But I will say why is your area? Because it has the same characteristics of sort of creative, adventuresome people with a mix of incomes and who may or may not be near their families.
Yeah.
Although folks like you moving to be closer to your kids, that's also very much part of the California phenomenon.
Right. And so you help people find a place to live, or you help people come together to to create a place?
Mostly we do both, but the creating of a place, Rains can speak a little further. We help them understand what the choice is and what the development process looks like. But the actual producing of a community, which involves, you know, putting together plans and permits and buying land together, we're very blessed in the co-housing world to have several key development consultants with lots of experience under their belt, including, of course, McKemmett Durrett Architects and their development partnerships they've created.
So how is it, what's it about the two of you that you would get on this bandwagon, that you would understand this like you have? What is it about you?
I think we know from having visited over 100 communities, lived in two. Betty comes from a co-op and a wider background as well. She's on the Fellowship for Intentional Community Board. We've seen enough of the process to help people stay out of the quicksand and get a good view. To just take a serious look at what's involved and get the right partnerships.
I would say before we even met, we each had a path towards this feeling more rewarded when we were involved in a sense of community and solidarity with other people.
Right.
So Rains was a founder of the Macintosh User Group.
Say that again.
Berkeley Macintosh User Group, BMUG.
Was a huge and grew to 16,000 people, but he was in the business, they all were, of giving information away so people could be empowered with their Macintosh computers. Mm-hmm. It was a profound movement. I'm not sure what happened. I'm an Army brat who landed up in a group house in Providence, Rhode Island, where I said, what is this we-ness I'm feeling, this we-ness, and ended up pursuing it academically through a bachelor's, a master's, and then a doctorate to understand community on many different levels. I will say that there's living in it. It's an experiential learning. Mm-hmm. Although I do love the history and the policy work that I do. Mm-hmm. It's the personal internal work of being in community has been the most illuminating. We've visited over 100 communities, and I'm on the research network, so we collect information to say, well, what's going on here that may or may not be different from others of our background?
And when we do orientations, we try to give people a taste of what it's like living in community. We do some gatherings, we call it Uncommon Meal, where people come here. If we invited people to dinner all the time, my neighbors would say, no, not more guests. Stop it. I don't want to live in a zoo. So on a night when we're not having dinner here, I'll have people over, and they'll come and cook together. So you get the experience cooking.
Navigate somebody who can't have gluten and someone who needs to have protein. So it's a wonderful experiment. And, of course, everyone loves sitting over dinner and sharing stories about themselves and what they're
and we've been part of groups that looked at what are the deeper patterns, the ideas that keep showing up in community. And so
idea of cooperative culture.
What is that?
Well, I just want to put a little pitch in for Fellowship for Intentional Community,
yes,
and IC.org.
Great resource.
ICintentionalcommunities.org. Which has been holding up this banner of cooperative culture in the form, for over, since before World War II. Essentially, cooperative culture, though, are people who are saying, we believe that these interrelationships that we create offer a more stable, secure way of life. They're more satisfying, as opposed to the everyone for themselves, go out and compete in the market, which we know has some perils and problems with it. So bringing forward the language of how you cooperate, how you make decisions as peers, rather than the noble leader who will either run you into the ground or somehow take you to stratosphere type.
Wait.
Rains, I think you're covering the microphone.
Yeah. Say what you just said, Betsy.
Say again.
What I said was there's been a history of people in America who've wanted to live in egalitarian ways without privileging one group of people or worshiping a hero or, a guru or a spiritual leader who's somehow the person who's going to tell them what to do. So cooperative culture really emerges out of the third way, which is slowly being documented and honored in the world. So I'll just say cooperative culture comes in, you can see it in the Nobel Prize in Economics.
For Eleanor Ostrom.
For Eleanor Ostrom, I think it was back in 2008 for her work on governance of commons all around the world, these environmental commons. And I see our intentional communities now in the U.S. is not about a religious minority a group that wants to practice free sex or something, as the 60s might have been. No, it's about people who want to learn how to live and make decisions cooperatively to have a base for their life that is rooted in not trying to one-up other people.
Right, right, right.
I'm not saying everyone does that, but we need that language. And there's to me, heroes and heroines of advancing cooperative culture.
Right. And I think that's how I'd like to see that's how I want the world to be in general.
Yeah.
You know, that's how I see the world anyway, just like that. And so, I'm very interested in what you're saying. And we can go on and on with all of these things. It's amazing.
I should make sure that people know that if they really want to get involved, serious about building community, the National Co-Housing Conference will be May 19th through 21st in Nashville, Tennessee this year. And well worth the journey. There's still space available and a great way to learn.
And talk about the visitor day, because that's also interesting.
A National Co-Housing Open House Day is April 29th. Cohousing.org on the national website has the information. And basically, there's communities all over the country that for part of the day are opening up their doors to say, come visit us. Some are coordinating. We're doing a bus tour here in the SF Bay Area and trying to help people see what options are. Even when there aren't resales, there's chance to get to know and learn from communities and maybe get a new one's going.
Yeah. Did Alice Alexander have any comments on the chat, our executive director of Coho US?
Yeah, Alice, that's good. Alice, by all means, add to our conversation. This is a good time. Thank you, Betsy.
I've been a long-time volunteer with the National Co-Housing Association and have been on the board, and it's an essential part of holding the movement together. Cohousing.org.
She's doing
website,
an amazing job.
Resource.
You know what I see? How I would define this?
What?
Capitalistic kibbutz.
We are. I mean, it's interesting to look at how in Israel, in fact, the kibbutz seem have fallen by the wayside. They are serving a different purpose now than in the founding of a nation. And, there's more. I mean, we're more like, I guess, moshavim, with a little more privacy, a little less shared child rearing. I think that there's been parallel evolutions, and we've had some people from Israel visiting here to learn about how to create co-housing there as well as here.
Yep.
Alice.
But also, Betsy said.
Well, we don't
share.
I mean,
what is that? Hold it up.
Income sharing. And we actually, co-housing was, one of these six founding common characteristics was we're not sharing incomes. We do share land together and property and management, but we don't share incomes. And so you're absolutely right. The difference may be in the test of our community strength is how do we navigate resales? Do what happens if we're in an area like here where the homes around us, small homes, are going for $1 million. So right now our community is having conversations and people are thinking about what do they want and need to be able to sell if they ever want to sell at the top of the market, or would they look at lower prices in order to continue the community that we already have?
Preserve affordability to the future.
For families.
That's an important. Yeah, do you make the money or do you sell it to keep the, what's most important?
And what's in between?
Yeah,
what's
right.
in between? So we're working with one neighbor around a community land trust. Several of us are thinking about how we could share, like after we're gone or when we sell, we would sell to a community land trust that would hold it for permanently affordable housing and sell and essentially sell the right to live here, the 99-year lease to live here based on people who want to be in community. That's very important. and what they can afford as a moderate income house.
We took this as far as up to the federal level. We met the federal housing commissioner and got 10,000 signatures on a petition in one weekend to help our neighbor Alice, you know, save her home and community. And in the process, we said, well, okay, we can change policy, but really, why should we let the money go to the big banks, and why should we let them keep the prices up there? As a community, we can fill the gaps. We can find alternative ways. We're figuring out how now. We just got our first grant to be able to pursue this. Small, but hopefully.
A revolving loan fund to help people live in co-housing who might not be able to afford it, but who when they sell, would be sharing their profits with others.
So
support them.
And Alice is on the chat, and she says,
this is a different Alice.
Co-housing is better than you expect, she said. Please join the National Co-Housing Open House Day, April 29th.
I encourage people to get past whatever ideas or stereotypes and be prepared to be surprised, and come with an open mind. That's been one of the hardest parts of marketing it. Most people can't believe that it does, you know, what it does. It's again not for everybody, but
you said you represent 4,000, 5,000 seekers. So what is hard if you have all? It sounds to me like you have more people than you have. A home.
In the Bay Area, that matches the overall pattern of demand and supply for housing.
We have people who are exploring living in community and are not ready to take steps. So they come and they meet other people here and they see what's available. We have other people who are urgently looking for a place to land, to live permanently. And a few of them have been able to find and be ready at the moment that homes are for sale in the co-housing communities around here. Others are priced out of most of the co-housing communities, and we've helped and supported them in creating study groups or forming groups to partner with an affordable housing developer or with a community land trust and create a housing cooperative, which can be eligible for certain types of what little public funding is available. But we're also, so yes, you're absolutely right. And that's the number of seekers far outstrips the available openings. So creating new communities is what we're trying to demystify for people.
Right. Do you have some communities that have schools on their property as well?
Well, not, so co-housing as a model, these six principles don't usually come with those kinds of attachments, although there are maybe a dozen or more communities that have a community supported agriculture.
I see.
There
are
some communities, but the intentional homeschooling, some do, but co-housing is not meant to be isolationist, you know. But there are other types of intentional communities around the country that occasionally have been designed around a school. Not that everyone goes to it. CELO, which is a community land trust community, started in the 1930s or 40s, I think.
In North Carolina?
In North Carolina, with a lot of Quakers, is the site of I think it's called the Arthur Morgan School, who was one of their founders. And there's a number of other, like, free school movements that got started. Farm in Tennessee, started in the 70s, one of the largest communes. They still have a school, although it's, I think it's accredited within the Tennessee schools.
Well, I think you've brought to life a kind of a foggy impression of what this really is. And we're almost out of time. I can't believe it. So you've been very interesting, and I really appreciate you bringing in as much as you have. So just in the final moment, what would you say, Rains, in the final moment? Betsy, both of you, in the final moment.
Well, you can see more about the communities we work with on our Co-Housing California website, calcoho.org. Of course, the national website, cohousing.org, has lists both events, the conference, the national days, and so on. As Betsy mentioned, ic.org for the Intentional Communities Movement. But I just encourage people to imagine yourself in community. Imagine yourself in a place where you have neighbors that care for you and people that you can care for and relationships that can let you live a richer, better connected life.
That's beautiful.
I think, the real potential.
That's beautiful. Thank you. And Betsy, what about you?
Well, I'm going to present the Group Works card deck, which is a pattern language.
Wait, come closer. I can't hear you.
Yeah, there we go.
Group Works card deck, not very graphic for you, but these are patterns that have been found.
Range, you got your hand on the mic.
Sorry. Real quick.
So I'll just show you real good. For anyone interested in this, take the right size bite.
Okay.
These are break things down if this seems overwhelming.
Time is up.
Time is up. All right, then I'll show you this. Common ground. Yeah. This is the idea that one of the patterns we're searching is find the things we most have in common and work from that.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
All right.
I decide to give more attention.
Thank
to
you.
Common
ground. Who would have thought we run out of time like this? But there's so much to talk about. So I'd like to come and revisit this again.
Absolutely. I think there's more subtopics to explore.
It's wonderful. So thank you both so much. Yeah. And Alice, I'm sorry you couldn't be here with us. Thank you for helping to spearhead and create all of this. And everybody out there, thanks so much for being here with us today, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
You're tuned to the Nissan Communications Network. If you tuned in too late, you can always watch each program in its entirety or download an MP3 audio file of it in the archives section on NissanCommunications.com. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow us on Twitter, and like us on Facebook. Sponsored by Atomos.com, makers of quality video recorders and converters, CarolinaApparel.com, and DeltaForce.net.